What's up, everybody? Super excited for this episode today. You're on another episode of The Next Round. We have the Lenny Gray.
What's up?
Door-to-door millionaire.
Here we are.
Founder, author of, just learned this, 4 books, not just 2 books.
Right.
So door-to-door millionaire, more door-to-door millionaire, and then All Your Pest Control Secrets. What are the names of the other 2 books?
So the other two are Door-to-Door Pest Control Sales, Learn What to Say in 77 Minutes. It's all my scripts.
Okay.
And then Door-to-Door Pest Control Sales, it's all my techniques. It's like 42 minutes of techniques to make millions, I think is the official title. So
boom.
Yeah.
You will probably get 1,000x ROI when you read those books.
Yes. So it's a done deal. Like anybody who gets my stuff gets an ROI. Like that's the easy part. It's just how much. So
love it. Well, appreciate you being here today.
Yeah.
Super excited for this one. Both Rosh and I sold pest control for years.
Now, funny enough, that was the first book I listened to going to the area. So I'm like, I can never forget those moments when you were knocking the storm. Like, oh man, I was driving to the area. I'm like, that's what I'm going to do with the summer.
Tornadoes in Tulsa. Like that. Everybody getting in their hidey ho. And here I am knocking doors. Crazy man. So yeah, good stories.
Yeah.
Love it. So for the very few out there that don't know the full background, started knocking in
1998.
Some of you listening, probably not even born yet. Yeah. So learned some tips and tricks today. Started in 98. And first question, I know we chatted about this beforehand. What was it like to sell before technology?
Yeah. So as I mentioned, I started selling before I even had a cell phone. My first 2 summers, I didn't even have a cell phone.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, you sell an account, you call from the customer's home phone.
Home phone, landline.
Yeah, you call from their landline and you call the office and, you know, you're getting the paper check because nobody trusted you with their credit card number. And then, you do the confirmation call with the customer, the office would right there. I was logging all my, you know, doors on the back of a flyer. So I'd write the street name and then you'd write the address and you'd check it if it was a no, circle it if it was a yes, star it if it was go back or whatever, you know. And so it was different. My 3rd summer knocking, I got a cell phone. And that it felt like that changed the world. It was like I could do so much more and so much quicker. So technology has been a blessing just in terms of being more efficient. I think getting yourself out there a little bit more to more people, being able to follow up, like you'd have a return appointment. Well, you'd have to walk
a
mile to the return appointment. Now you can just text them. Yeah, you guys there? You ready for me to stop by? And it's like, nope, we're not interested. Okay, well, that just saved me a half an hour, you know? So I think just the efficiencies that come with technology have been awesome for the industry.
Oh, yeah. No, it's awesome. So obviously first started knocking and then built up Rove Pest Control.
Yep.
So what was that like in the beginning? You know, walk us through. Initially started knocking, working for a marketing company for Eclipse, and then transitioned into now I'm going to go build my own thing.
Yeah. So I, along my journey with Eclipse, I had met McKay, who's still my business partner to this day, 20 whatever years later. And he was doing operations. He was doing the day-to-day at an Orkin franchise down in Albuquerque.
Okay.
And so he knew door-to-door he knew like business to business, day to day pest control, what that looked like. I had no idea. I just sold the stuff and I didn't have anything to do with it from there. Even though I have a funny story about having to service my own accounts, that's probably illegal, but I did.
you grabbed the Webster poll.
My first year, we got some stories to tell when Orkin decided not to show up for our startup that day. So we got it done because in Alabama, they get her done. That's what we did.
Yep.
But I'd met McKay because there's a lot of buzz back then, late 90s, early 2000s, where people are like, we should do our own pest control company. We don't have to do it for Orkin or Eclipse. Yeah. We should just do our own. And the guys that would generally come to me that were interested in maybe partnering with me, they all did what I did. They were sales guys.
Yeah.
So I'm like, why would I partner with somebody that does the same thing?
Yeah, we're all doing the same. Yeah.
You know? Like, I'm fine at sales. I don't need help with that. I need somebody who knows how to kill bugs.
Right.
I'd met McKay and my wife and I just had our first child as well. And he had some issues when he was younger and I was tired of traveling because I traveled so much with Orkin and they'd fly me all over to test market different areas and different things. So I'm like, I went to the owner and I said, hey, is there any position for me at this company where I don't have to travel as much? And he just straight up said, no. I said, all right, then I'm going to do my own thing. That's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we started in Utah in 2003. We started our first, it was actually called Mountain West Pest Control here. Okay. But, you know, when we kind of extended our reach to different states and markets, there was not a lot of mountains and wasn't pest in some of them. So we came up with Rove, which is actually a classification of a beetle. A Rove beetle is a pretty awesome beetle. It can walk on water. Its venom is like 10 times as poisonous as a cobra's or something. I can't remember all the details, but I was like, oh, it's kind of like a scavenger beetle. It kills other bugs. Let's do that.
Yeah. So there you go.
That was the name for Rove. But.
Awesome. And so built that up for 4 years and then
5 years.
Got acquired.
Yeah. So 5 years, we'd become the biggest residential pest control company in the state of Utah. And in the meantime, we had started Tulsa, Oklahoma. We started up in Minnesota. We had started, I think, Nebraska by that point in time. So we had other operations up and going. But yeah, Terminix kind of came calling, and they didn't like the idea of being second biggest. And I'm sure they made us an offer, and we were just, you know, this is when we were in our 20s, for crying out loud.
Like, right.
You know, we had the big acquisition in our 20s, and then we had another acquisition after we built up a bunch more branches because we just sold Utah. As we were building up those other ones, we had a big acquisition in 2014 in our 30s. And then, yeah, here we are today, still growing, building up more road branches all over the country.
Love it. Now, it's something that, I mean, we were talking previously, I appreciate about what you do is you still get out there. You still, you know, make it happen, still build and then coach people on it and actually like in the thick of it. So,
yeah, we, in fact, last summer, I'm going out here in the next couple of weeks, but last summer I was out with, we just had a few guys in our Michigan market. And I think we had 4 guys out there. And so I went and knocked doors with them. And of course, they always say, can you just knock some doors for us?
Yeah.
And I'm like,
yeah.
I'm just trying to teach you how to do this. Like, I know I can do it. We don't have to worry about that. And like, oh, can you please just knock? So I knocked with my 4 guys. I talked to one person with each of those guys. So I talked to 4 people. I sold 3 of them. So I'm like, I know how to do this. Like, yeah. I'm not worried about, you know, me doing it anymore. It's more like, let me make sure I'm making sure the reps that I train are right. Really good at what they're doing.
Where did the inspiration of writing that book came from? Like, because back then, like, there was no, you know, manual to read through. There was nothing going on. But like, where was the inspiration for you to like go write this book, which will literally make everyone who's never knocked door aware of what this world exists?
Yeah. So I love that question. A lot of people don't know this. So I, about that time that I, you know, as I was starting to write the book, I was consulting for a fintech company. And this fintech company is now valued at over $2 billion. And I was one of the first 6 people in the room. They wanted me to put together kind of their B2B sales program. And so I was with them for about 1.5 years. And as I was working with them, I was just kind of finishing up my book. And it was kind of my stamp on the industry because I was going to leave door to door. I was like, I might as well leave something behind that has helped me because I'm very comfortable and confident in how I do door to door. It's integrity based. It's honest. And we know there's a lot of reps out there that think they got to lie, cheat, and steal. And most of them are just ignorant because they don't know because somebody they saw one time was successful saying or doing something they shouldn't do. And so I thought, I just want to leave it better than I found it. So let me just write this book, put my stamp on the industry, and I'm out.
Wow.
And, well, lo and behold, people read this book and were like, this book's awesome. Yeah. Like this actually makes a lot of sense. Can you teach RP? And then it kind of really just threw me back in like more violently than I was before.
Right.
Like, no, you need to be the guy in door to door to really teach how to do this the right way. So yeah, I kind of wrote the book to be done. And then obviously that didn't really happen. Here we are, whatever. I think that book, my first book was released in 2012 or 2013. So now we're a decade or more later, yes. And here we are. I've written 3 more and, you know, still in the industry.
It's crazy to know because I feel like almost everybody I've met in door-to-door is like, oh, one day I'll get out of it. And here talking to the door-to-door millionaire, also thinking you were going to get out of it, and now you're pulled back into it fully.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, it was an interesting time of life. But I feel like when I first started at Eclipse, I mean, before I started, they give you your manual, and it was like a 10-page manual. And it was like, here's what you need to know. And it's like my first week knocking doors, I had it memorized. I'm like, there's nothing really in this. There's some things, but there's so much more to know about door to door.
Yeah.
And so I love the idea of just really unfolding like what every aspect happens from when you knock on the door and they answer. What do you say? How do you look? How do you appear to when you're leaving with a signed agreement, you know, and how do you make sure what you sell, you get paid for and everything, all the steps in between. So I've kind of systematized the whole door-to-door approach to where it's like from start to finish, I know exactly what I want to say. I teach exactly what you say at certain times, how to overcome specific objections that you get. So to me, it's like math now. Wow. Door-to-door is a system, just like
it's like finding patterns, right? Like, I mean, you have now consulted 30 plus industries. What do you see from the behavior of the humans buying anything on door-to-door, if that changes much between different products you consult for?
Yeah, I think we were talking about this a little bit before. I think people are more comfortable and trusting of door-to-door people, because when I first started in it, sometimes when Orkin was flying me out to Denver or Portland, I'd talk to people and they were very like, whoa, door-to-door, like this all sounds good, but we got to look into this. Like we're, you know, they'd take all my time and I'd be like, oh my gosh, I just spent 20 minutes with somebody. I'm not going to get a deal. And they were so interested. Now I think people make a decision a lot quicker. So I think you have to hold people's attention and get people's attention a lot quicker. Like one of the chapters in my first book is called 45 seconds. And the idea is that's how much time you would have to make a first impression on somebody to do your initial approach. I've actually, if I could rewrite that right now, I'd call it like 25 seconds. Because I think in the last decade or more, people's attention spans have shrunk. And so you actually need to captivate somebody a lot quicker than you used to. So I think the buying habits and going from your other question as far as just industry to industry, I don't think there's much of a difference as I go. I think what the change is to me, it's more, what is the what's the contract value? Is it a really high ticket item? Is it really low ticket? Because it's all a volume play at that point. Like, can I go sell one a day and be happy because the ACV is this much? Or do I have to sell five or six a day because the ACV is only that much? So I really think that all things being equal, you can go sell a lot of products and services door to door and make comparable money. I mean, now you get the layers of like the solar, right? Now you have the setter that's just setting all the appointments so the closer can do what they do best and close. So now you have these different layers that are put in. So that's maybe in the last decade or so, that's been a change. But for the most part, I mean, going door to door and pitching, you know, rain gutters or roofing or landscaping and lawn care or pool service and plumbing, I don't know, whatever it is, it's like, whatever you're going to do, like, I think people have a need for it. And if you're really good, you can sell it.
So one question on the training element of it, without, you know, giving anything away, you have your books.
Well, I'll give it all away.
What's, you know, okay, we're a new company, let's say they're trying to now implement the door-to-door strategy. What does the training element need to look like for them?
Yeah, it needs to be, and this is, I've got all this on like on my website now, right? And I have an app that's free, you know, that people can even get, you know, pieces of this. It's called Ask Lenny, by the way.
I downloaded it. Ask Lenny. It's okay. Green.
Ask Lenny. Green and gold, color money, right? But yeah, it's totally a free app that people can go in and just ask questions to it. There's a search function. The idea is we all know that team leads and owners and managers get really busy and they get bombarded with the same questions over and over again. So it's like, well, if they can just ask me, it can save the manager a lot of time, right? And they get pretty dang good quality of training that's proven. You know, a manager might not have that much experience, or sometimes team leads aren't the best salespeople. They're just really good leaders. So it's like, why not have that piece that can alleviate that pain point for and time suck for you know, people that are trying to answer every question for every rep. That's just really difficult. Mm-hmm. So, but just back to your question, I think, you know, when you start in door to door or you're thinking about doing a company, I think your training, it has to be something that has withstood the tests of time. That's one thing I pride myself on, is I'm not just a really good door-to-door sales rep. Like, I ran a successful pest control business for over two decades now. Yeah. So I'm not just really good at sales, because we all know the companies that just have a lot of great salespeople, but horrible retention and horrible service and that doesn't work.
Yeah.
So I see it from the vantage point of, I'm an owner, so I know how things should be sold. so that I'm trying to get long-term customers. I'm not just trying to get the quick hitters and, you know, the rep mentality where it's like, I just need to get paid to my back end and then I'm good. You know, I'm out of here at that point. Like, that's not how I train and how I teach. So if you have a company that's just starting out, they can get burned if their door-to-door program's not set up the right way. If they don't have the right training and they just leave it up to the reps or leave it up to people that don't really have a process dialed in. And so that's so important to have your training right. I always say the training is the first piece you should have in place before you even think about going to recruit and to hire. Because you put a lot of resources. The biggest mistake business owners make that want to get into door-to-door, they put all their resources into hiring or recruiting and hiring. And then if their reps are there and they don't have good training, then the reps quit. And all those resources are gone because it's like, no, you didn't train them well enough. That's got to be the first thing that's in place, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's the old adage of, you know, the CFO comes to the CEO and the CFO says, hey, we're spending all this money on training. What if we don't get the volume out of them? And then the CEO is like, well, what if we don't get the people to go actually put the volume in? Like, it's the chicken and the egg problem, you know? So I've always been a proponent of having the system first so that you can actually go scale it. So one question with that is new company in pest control, let's call it. And I mean, you know, learning from me, you can go do this with any company, right? But should they primarily focus on the marketing element, or should they go into it trying to build with the service side implemented first too?
I think a lot of that depends on what the contract value is. Because if it's a low contract, I mean, let's just use pest as an example. You know, it's whatever, several hundred dollars, $1,000, whatever the ACV is. Like, I think most people can be trained to go out and close deals pretty quickly to their start. Right, to the starting point. I think we can do that. And that's why when you start getting really big, like roofing sometimes, you know, the roofing tickets maybe 20K or the solar's 40K, whatever. That's why a lot of times people start as setters because they're kind of learning the industry, figuring it out, and they can make good money because they're making, you know, whatever they're making their hourly, and then they're getting a little piece for, you know, set appointments and sat appointments and then closes. They'll make a little commission off that. But I think the idea is I believe there's something for everybody in door-to-door. But it really just depends on what that ACV looks like. Because the higher the ACV, I think the more polished a rep needs to be to actually close deals.
Yeah.
And that goes to the next question. I think since probably when you started, the pest control values or ACV were probably way lower than what they are today.
Sure.
And sure, part of that is inflation, cost going up. But right now we're seeing a big range, even in pest control, from like $600 all the way to $2K per contract. Do you really think the actual value of the pest control contracts exist in that high range, even if you can polish it that much, or it's more?
No, I think what it is really the difference in ACV right now is length of agreement. I think you're seeing 2-year contracts, 18-month contracts. You're seeing the 12-month, the kind of the standard one. So I think that's where the change is more so than you know, some company can put up some magic formula of pest juice that all of a sudden gets rid of everything better than it. We all use the same stuff,
right?
You know, we use the
same
techniques. Yep. So I don't think there's anything, you know, I think the ACV is based on the length of the agreement more so than what the actual service is.
Is engineering just the ACV to pay out the commissions more, right? So,
yep, exactly. Protect your customers from all the other door-to-door people trying to switch over your accounts, right? You have them on a 2-year instead of a 1-year. I get it. Like, I get that's why companies do that. But yeah, I don't think there's anything. I mean, to your point too, my first year when we started in Utah in 2003, it was me selling, my business partner was spraying, it was just the two of us, and I put on about $500,000 in business. So if I go in and look at the conversion of $500,000 in 2003 compared to 2025, it's like 850, 900K or something like that. So yeah, the dollar amount over time looks like it's getting bigger, but a lot of that is because of just
cost,
inflation, all those things that you mentioned. So,
right. One thing to ask, I've heard that you brought this up on another podcast, is using the analogy of a stool with multiple legs, door-to-door just being one of those legs. So what would you say new business, you know, trying to either add on door-to-door or a company that does have door-to-door trying to add on other, you know, legs to that stool?
Yeah. So most of us in Utah, we start with door-to-door.
Totally.
But outside of Utah, everybody's like, no, I figured out LSAs and GMBs, and I figured out how my door hangers, what they convert at, and all these things. Like, I like the idea of adding door-to-door as an ancillary piece. I think that's I mean, if you look at acquisitions nowadays, right? You look at PE companies or strategics that are acquiring, they value door-to-door accounts differently, especially door-to-door accounts that are within their agreement, you know, first year, second year agreement, whatever that looks like. And so if a company's kind of figured out their marketing and their growth strategy, and then they can come in as this ancillary piece and add door-to-door, I think that's a way more powerful, economical, and it actually is a more value, it increases the valuation at a higher level, a higher multiple by doing it that way. And so companies that don't have connections to a bunch of return missionaries in Utah, they can still put together a door-to-door program with the right training, right? The right ideas with recruiting and hiring and all those things. They can put it together more economically, and they can just add it as a piece, which I think actually helps their valuation more on that side of it than the beginning.
That's very interesting you mentioned that, because I think there's a lot of changes happening with the space. Existing companies which were just door-to-door now are trying to branch off door-to-door, including yours. You mentioned, I think before we started the conversation, that a lot of the volume is now happening through marketing, digital channels, and now door-to-door becomes a piece of it. Is that more also because you control the quality of the products a little bit better? You're controlling the service because now you're mixing that with a blended mix of what people can do and sell, along with what you're truly providing from organic growth.
Yeah. And think about how cool this is. Like I can go in and I coach a client, for instance, a pest control client that's in the Southwest. I can go to this client and I can say, okay, here's what we did. We looked at geographically where his service range was. And it was kind of like spotty and all over. And I'm like,
you just take accounts where they were.
Yeah. It's like, well, hey, when I put an advertisement on the radio, we just take what we can get. Well, now I can go in and say, okay, if we can dial in this door-to-door piece, now we can say, we're going to put 223 accounts in this zip code. We're going to put 117 in this zip code. We're going to put 42 in this zip code. And now what we've done is we've just made his company way more efficient, because now there's not the traveling all over the place. That's what door-to-door does, right? That's why the appeal to it, even though the cost is so high, the appeal is, guess what? I become much more efficient. I actually make more money by doing more services in any given day. So
route density, route optimization.
Yep.
It's all there.
100%.
So with newer industries that are trying to add it on now, is it same approach for them? They're kind of spread out. They want to get more density. They want to become more efficient. Is it, we're not capturing as much, maybe want to grow faster? I mean, probably all the above.
Yeah. A little bit of a mix. So sometimes it depends on if they're like in a business of selling recurring services as well. Because if they're not, if it's just kind of a one-time type of a thing, right? Then if you don't have something quarterly or bi-monthly or even annually, then it's more just let's add. I just want to add people. So I mean, here's a cheat code to me. If you're a business owner right now and you're thinking to yourself, yeah, I might want to try door-to-door. I've already got customers, but this route density thing sounds cool. The thing that I would do is I would get the right training, I'd get a couple reps, and I would go talk to every next door neighbor of your current customer. That's the first thing I would do. Because now you've already got a customer base, you've been treating Miss Jones and Mr. Jones for, you know, 7 years, and their neighbors have seen your truck for 7 years straight, park at their house, do the service and leave. Like, you automatically have legitimacy. You're not just random door to door, you have legitimacy, and now your reps are just targeting those next door neighbors. That'll consolidate and make your company more efficient, like overnight, doing something like that.
Yeah. When I've seen you do the top five pest control companies.
Yeah.
You do the ratings on there. What goes into that? How do you rate them? What's the give the secret sauce out there? GreenX won it this last year.
They won it two years in a row.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. 2 years in a row.
Well done, guys. What do companies need to be looking for? What do you base it off of?
Yeah. So these are my newsletter subscribers. So I have a newsletter I put out. It's basically a weekly sales tip. It's a tip of the week. Anybody can subscribe. You go to LennyGray.com/newsletter. You can subscribe for free. And all you're going to get is you're going to get sales tips from me. That's it. Yes. You know, and which is pretty cool. Doesn't cost you anything. Like I said, the ROI on that's pretty great. And what I decided, so as we kind of stepped away from doing a lot of door-to-door, I was like, I wonder, because I would get asked all the time by neighbors and friends and family, like, who should I go sell for? Who should I do door-to-door with? And I'm like, I need to know, like, who's the shiz, right? Like, who is doing it the right way? So I basically polled my thousands of newsletter subscriber, and I had, like, different criteria. I think there's, like, eight of them. where it's like, whether it's incentives or compensation, experience, leadership, whatever, you know, whatever they were. I was like, just give me a rating, like a 1 through 5. What's your rating of your experience with your company that you've been selling for? And so I just compiled all the results. And the funny thing is, the first year I did it, a lot of people were like, oh, I wonder what Rove's ranking is going to be. Rove's going to be in there. And it's like, no, we didn't make it. And I was okay. Like, I didn't care. I wasn't doing it. Or like,
I'm not stacking the results here. I promise.
I just wanted like an honest, like, what, who is providing the best experience out there for door-to-door pest control reps? That's what I wanted. So I did the survey, and now it's got a lot of traction and people look forward to it. And how do I get on that? You know, it's like, well, have your reps subscribe to my newsletter. That's the first thing. They're not going to get the survey unless they subscribe to my newsletter. Have them do that, and then just give them a freaking A-plus experience when they go work for your company, and you'll rank high. Because I had somebody just the other day. It'll be a company that will remain unnamed because they didn't make my top 5. And they're like, why do you hate this company? I was like, I don't hate any company. You need to get more people from your company.
What do you share the sort of results to them, saying, hey, these are the reasons why, here's data?
Well, yeah, that's certainly part of it. But it's like, I also have, like, I don't want, like, I'll get like these one-off companies that nobody's ever heard of.
Yeah.
And it'll probably be the owner, and he ranks himself, you know,
fives all across.
Yeah. It's like, there's a minimum threshold. Like, I need to have at least X number of surveys before I just start ranking Mr. No Name, who's just, him and his wife did 2 surveys. It's like, no, there needs to be, you know, several surveys that have to be filled out before I can give somebody that ranking. So it's just like, hey, if you don't like the results, then just get more of your people to jump in and make sure they have a good experience. And again, to me, I love the idea of elevating the door-to-door industry.
Yep.
And if it can make it better for the reps, make it better for businesses, like by teaching ethical ways, if we can do that, I think we win, because this industry, I'm going on 30 years in this industry, and it's changed my life. And I don't want to see a couple knuckleheads out there that do it the wrong way, that lie, cheat, and steal their way to success. And then they teach their people that. I just don't want to see that bring something down that is so special and can do so much good for so many people.
Oh, definitely. Question on, okay, let's say I have been at a company for a while and I do want to go start my own thing. How do those people do it successfully without, you know, like you're saying, the intention of, oh, I just need to go make more money, I need to go do something else, but it's like, I do want to create another better opportunity for people in the future. What's kind of some tips, tricks, pointers for those guys?
Yeah, I mean, hire for your weaknesses, you know, or hire around your weaknesses, I think is the first thing. If I decided, like sometimes just because you have twice as much doesn't mean you just grow twice as fast. It could be exponential growth. So, okay, I use this analogy a lot. So my wife and I, right, been married 27 years. We have 5 kids. Great relationship, right? So if we're going to make the bed in the morning, right, we get up and it's maybe I decide, well, I'll make the bed this morning, or she'll make the bed. I don't know. We don't have a chore chart for each other, but whatever. So who's going to make the bed? If I just made the bed, let's say it takes me 60 seconds. I don't know. I walk to one side, I walk to the other. If she just makes the bed, maybe it's 50 seconds because she's just more efficient than me. I don't know, whatever. If we make the bed together, we don't finish it in half the time. We finish it in like 10 seconds.
Yeah.
Right? So I look at business partnerships the same way. Like some people are just maybe more wired to do things alone and on their own because maybe they're really good at a lot of things. But I would rather have less of the piece of pie and a bigger pie.
Totally.
By having partners that do things that I'm not good at or that I don't like doing, because then more people win and there's more pie at the end of the day. So I don't know why I use that making the bed thing. Like I it's just one of the, I think we were making the bed together once and I was like, dang, that just.
You clocked it.
That was so fast.
So much quicker than me trying to do this on my own, or you on your, like, this just makes sense. And it's like, I think that just relates to business a lot of ways too.
Yeah, that's definitely.
And you have now consulted for tons of companies, from large organizations all the way to smaller businesses. What have you seen the trends change when you have a bigger organization already very well established, and now they're trying to incorporate door-to-door? What things they fail with, or what things they can do really well, because they're coming from a completely different perspective than a brand new business just trying to do door-to-door.
Well, they have the resources. Mm-hmm. So that's the first thing that comes to mind is when I work with organizations that have been around for a while, like they have the funds to go out and put money into something for instance, we talked about A1 Garage Door. Mm-hmm. And A1, they're doing door-to-door marketing, so it's not really selling. We're not necessarily generating a lot of revenue on the door. So they've got to have the ability to pay reps before the revenue is realized. If you're a brand new company,
right,
you're only going to pay for play, right? Yeah. It's like, I need to pay when I get paid from somebody. So I think that's probably the biggest difference when I consult for companies that are brand new, you know, new shop, you know, everything's just based on one person or a few people versus a company that's established. I don't think this, I mean, obviously your flexibility in scheduling and servicing, I mean, all that plays into it as well, depending on what you're doing. Like if you have 40 technicians versus one, you know, you're going to have more availability to do some things. So how many people you hire, how fast you can grow that, I mean, all plays into it. But I also recommend to a lot of business owners, like, don't start big. Mm-hmm. Don't try to get 10 door-to-door reps if you're just going to dabble in door-to-door and see what it looks like. Get two or three.
Yeah.
Like just see what it feels like and looks like so that you can be more empathetic to the cause when you do amplify it and get 30 people, you know, 3 years later.
Now, how does that change for the reps, right? So now we talked about the businesses. How's the experience different for the reps for working for a bigger organization which has no door-to-door experience, maybe better servicing, maybe better processes versus working for a door-to-door company which just deals with reps?
So we've probably all been in a situation where we could put on more, as really good door-to-door sales reps, we could put on more accounts and get them serviced quicker if we had more capacity. And when you're dealing with the smaller shops, it's harder to do that, you know? So a rep could be constrained by availability, but that's typically just like the big dogs, right? That are putting on a bunch of stuff. Some of the guys nowadays, it's like, oh, I have my own truck, right? I have my own truck follow me. Like I will tell you, I never had my own truck follow me except for when we first started our company, my first few hours.
Yeah.
Because my guy had nothing to do.
Yeah.
But once I started filling him up, then it was like I was scheduling the next day for the whole time that we were out doing it, right? So I think from a sales rep standpoint, 95% of all reps, you're not going to see like much of a change. It just is what it is. I go sell my one or two accounts. I get them put on the next day. It's great. You know, there's not really a constraint there. But you will have that. That'll hurt a lot more for people that don't have that have the ability to sell a lot and that need to get their stuff out ASAP.
Makes sense. Yeah. How have you seen compensation adjust in the industry over the past, you know, 20 plus years?
It's a sales reps world. We all know that.
Yeah.
So back in the day, I mean, everybody would laugh at what, you know, percentages I was making on my accounts when I saw, I mean, it was in the teens or 20s, right? Like yep. It was just like, I pulled out an old rate card from the Eclipse days and I just had to laugh at myself, right? So everything, the pendulum has definitely swung in the favor of, well, we got this talent, right? That can go do something that a lot of people can't do. Really good reps, like they don't grow on trees, right? And so in order to keep that talent, we've got to pay for that. Almost to the demise, right? Now we're getting over 100% of you know, paying on a first year agreement where there's no guarantee that you're going to make money on that if the customer sticks around. Like it's almost kind of scary, but it's similar to like professional sports, right? You don't need like 32 teams to believe in you. You just need one, and if one believes in you and pays you, that's all you need.
Yeah.
And so there's companies, whether they have backing from private equity money or what other investments or investors in their company, if they have that they'll probably continue to pay ridiculous prices. So the sales rep side of me says, get it while you can, like really? Get it. Like if they're going to pay it, then you go get it. But the business owner part of me is like, this is not sustainable. Like how can this work? So I think, yeah, like I said, it's definitely swung from, it's like an owner's world to now it's the reps world. Like reps kind of control a lot of that now.
And usually the results are affecting things in the future. So what's your forecast? Do you think in like next 10 years, things going to go back a little bit because of the experience people have seen now? The sales volume is great, but if it's less retention, high churn, then probably people are going to start realizing that this is probably not the best spend and go back towards a better comp.
Yes, it's always hard to take away money. We all know that from sales reps, right? You can get them, inch them up a little bit, but the minute you start taking away, like it's mutiny. It's like, no, you don't take away my money. So I don't know how that's a great question. I don't know. I don't know how that looks. But I do think, depending on what the end game is, if the end game for an owner is to sell, then if the money coming in or the acquirers coming in will not pay a certain amount because, like we talked about before, because maybe door-to-door is not looked at, if a company doesn't have long-term success with it and good retention, they're not going to look at that as valuable. At some point, there's the tipping point, right? Where it's like, okay, this doesn't make sense to continue to pay X amount for these accounts if we're going to try to sell them in Y number of years down the road. So I think there's, I mean, every business is different. Some people want to be in it forever. Some people want to leave a legacy company for their kids or whatever. Some people are like, let me just make as much money as I can as quickly as possible. Yeah. So I think a lot of that's going to depend on what the business owners, the decision makers, ultimate goal is with their company.
Mm-hmm. With industries that are, you know, let's say not as door-to-door dominant, but, you know, let's take Tommy's garage doors, right? Adding on door-to-door. How do you structure a comp plan? How do you incentivize for something that's brand new, that hasn't been tested, that hasn't, you know, there's no track record to follow on and be like, cool, I know by standards, you start at 30%, you increase every X amount of accounts or revenue. Like, what have you done for those?
So this is what I love to do because it's fun, because there is no baseline. There's no history.
And you have like, an open sheet.
You kind of got to figure this out. So, you know, with Tommy's project, that, you know, this has been 5 years now in the making. I mean, number one, I was in Phoenix every week for a couple nights for a year straight. I was not there on Christmas and New Year's. That was it. Every other week I was there and I was on the doors myself. I was figuring it out. I was hiring people, helping them to figure it out, because we had no idea what we should pay or what it looked like. And the compensation, I will tell you, over the last 5 years has probably changed a half a dozen times. So I don't think with a new industry, with a new program door to door, I don't think you can just knock it out of the park the first time. You just have to be willing to learn and stub your toe a little bit, scratch your knee and say, hey, we got to learn from that. We got to change things. Mm-hmm. And like I said, you start taking money, maybe you pull back a little bit, you go, you know, we start probably lower than we needed to be. We got to a point where we got a little higher. You start to take that away. You got reps that are like, no, like that, you know, it's just, you kind of live and learn through the process. But that, again, to me, that's what's exciting. And that's what's fun about doing it in different industries is you can kind of see what works, what doesn't, and you have to kind of play around with some things.
Yeah. 33 plus or
33 now. Yeah. At last count, I could probably taken a few phone calls in the last couple months and maybe I could add to that, but 33 home service verticals, different ones have reached out to me. And obviously multiple in each, you know, in various of the industry, not all 33, but that have reached out that says, how do we do door to door? Or do we do door to door? That's the other thing. Like, I don't always just give the green light. Like, you should do this. Like, I talked to somebody a month or two ago and I was like, you know, he kind of explained what his deal was. And I was like, I wouldn't do that door to door. I mean, you can do it if you want, but here are the reasons why I wouldn't. Most of the time, I think there's a green light to a path to success with door to door. But for this, you know, this guy, maybe a handful of people over the years, I've been like, nah, I don't know why I'd do it. You know, it would seem to me it's a low conversion, low need, low contract value. And it's just like, it's just not
worth it.
It's not worth the, the juice isn't worth the squeeze, I think. Or the, is that what they say? I don't know.
Yeah, I think we're good.
Okay.
I think,
Whatever it is, you want to just there. So it all works.
What's on the roadmap for you? What's the next couple of years look like? What's, you know, you just released the books. So
release the pest books, which are, it's got a lot of traction. Like I said, everything that I say, like my scripts, all my techniques, everything, I've just put it all out there. I'm like, let's make the pest control industry even bigger, badder, and better than it's ever been. So that's certainly there. I probably have some other books up my sleeve that I'd like to give back to different industries that I've been heavily involved with. So I could see that on the horizon. Shoot, my wife and I had a bonus baby 3 years ago, so I got a 3-year-old for crying out loud. So I'm trying to remember what it's like to raise young ones. Like my other kids, I've got like 22, 20, 18, 16, and 3. Yeah. So we're kind of starting over with being parents, which is fun too. So like that's been my thing. I think I told you guys I've been working from my home office since we sold our Utah branch since 2007. Yeah. I love to stay busy. I love to work. I love to help other people. I love to, again, elevate the door-to-door industry. So whatever I can do to do things like that, I'm all game. As long as it's not golf, like I'll do anything but go golfing. No thanks. Nice.
Awesome. Well, Lenny, appreciate you. For those that want to follow, best place to go, website, social media.
Yeah, all the above. So LennyGray.com, D2DMillionaire.com. We're on all the platforms. We got hundreds of videos on D2D Millionaire, the YouTube channel. Nice. I'm on Insta, Facebook, X. Search up Lenny Gray. I give a lot of free stuff. That's the thing I do, man. There's so much
free app. Ask Lenny. Free app. Got a lot of good stuff in there. The newsletter you mentioned. Yep. Go on Amazon, get the books.
I do monthly webinars for door-to-door reps and business owners. So yeah, if you go to my website, you'll probably have more free stuff than you'd ever want to learn about door-to-door. But that's I think that's important. I do. I think it's important to give back because again, I was that first year rep who had a 10-page manual that felt like I knew nothing after a few days of knocking doors. So I'm like, I would want everybody to go out knocking doors to feel comfortable and confident that here's a system, here's a process that actually works and that is ethical, that I can feel good about at night, go to bed, lie my head on my pillow going, hey, I did it the right way. That's really what it's all about.
Awesome. Yeah, no, thank you for keeping the industry ethical and moral. I think you're one of the few people who actually really focuses on non-purpose driven, just value creation without having any selfish interest. So thanks for doing that.
Yeah, awesome. Appreciate you, man. You're the man. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been a blast.